We know that encountering ghosts on the daily is very difficult, but what is also hard is running a business, even if it's a creatively spooky business. Today, we shift our focus toward the nuts and bolts of running a successful enterprise with a goth macabre bent. Our guests, Matt and Meredith, founded Boardwalk as a way to create quality designs with a dark sense of humor. Hear their stories and learn how they make their business work today on Homespun Haynes. Well, hello, Hainted Loves. Welcome to Homespun Haynes. I'm Becky.
I'm Diana.
And today on the show, we are thrilled to bring on Matt and Meredith, the owners of Boardwalk. You have probably seen these amazing designs show up in your Instagram feed. Well, you're going to get to hear the genius behind the designs and a little bit about their quirky, dark, macabre sense of humor. Diana and I are, believe it or not, even though we play crazy maniacs on TV, we are business people.
Crazy, maniacal business people. That's us. That was a good crazy maniacal business laugh.
Wasn't that? Yeah. Yes. I will curse the competition.
Remember, witches and pirates are business people too. Arr. It's all just transactions.
Exactly.
Piracy is bad.
Please don't pirate unless you're Grace O'Malley.
Oh, definitely. Awesome. Yeah.
A little different though. Different times.
We'll forgive her transgressions.
Since we're talking about business and spooky business people and spooky things that you can buy and make and sell, Diana and I have been doing some things on the back end, literally, that you may not be familiar with. As you all may know, we've talked about before, I am a web designer. And Diana is a writer, and we have been working our little pointy, gnarly little witchy fingers to the bone building websites lately. And we just want to put this out there that if you are a small business or a large business and you need a website, well, your creators are just at your fingertips. You can reach us not at homespunhaints.com, though that is a fabulous website, if I might say so myself.
Hey, who built that website, Becky?
I wonder. Built it from scratch, I did. And who wrote all that amazing content for it?
Also scratching away. Scratch.
You can visit our company website at theconceptspot.com if you're interested in any web design services. Hex is not included. So Diana, how has your week been going?
Rather boring so far. How about you?
So I had an interesting thing happen this morning.
Oh,
yes. The last episode we talked about how we were at Eastern State Penitentiary because we roll like that. We go haunted places together. We were at Eastern State Penitentiary. We scooched our little tushes into the little part of the tuberculosis ward that they would let you in. It was kind of roped off. And as soon as we were in there, I felt something just come from the ceiling and leap onto my head.
Mm-hmm. Which was weird because I kept feeling things climbing onto my back.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd gotten rid of it.
Uh-oh.
I went to visit my acupuncturist this morning, as I'm wont to do, because as I may or may not have talked about this on the show, I am severely injured from being a musician for years and years and years. Yeah. So I have to do a lot of maintenance just to make my hands work because they got to work.
Being a musician is a grueling sport.
It is.
Lots of injuries. People don't appreciate that.
It's tough. I have fucked up my wrist beyond repair. Well, not beyond repair. They were repaired weekly.
By a team of rehabilitation experts. Yes.
Yes. That thankfully my insurance covers. So I've got acupuncture, chiropractor, and massage therapist. Lucky for me, my acupuncturist is awesome. Very woo.
She sees all. Her third eye is so open.
Really is.
So open.
She's amazing. I was lying there on the table with needles sticking out of my wrists and things. Then when we're done, she's like, by the way, you had an entity on your head.
On your head. She knew.
She said it was on my head and on my left shoulder and then like down into my chest. It had gotten in there. I was like, yeah, I think it came from the tuberculosis wing at the Eastern State Penitentiary. And she's like, it was a dark, smoky mass. It was in there good. And I'm like, how'd I get rid of it?
So that means you brought that thing on the plane with us? That sounds dangerous.
All I could think of is that Twilight Zone skit with William Shatner and the thing got on the wing.
Yikes. Well, at least you didn't eat anybody on the way back. That's good.
This is true. Not this time. And when I explain why I keep, if you notice for the last few weeks, like I keep looking to the left, I keep thinking that somebody's standing over there.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what this was. Maybe it's gone.
Creepy. Obviously, that means that our protection mechanism didn't work.
What protection mechanism?
Because remember, we were both independently, without communicating it, walking through the whole place saying, I'm just a visitor. I'm not taking you home with me. We don't know each other. We're just going to say hi, and then we're going to part ways, and you're not following me home.
Right?
We both were repeating this, muttering under our breath the whole time we were there, and apparently that doesn't work. So what are we doing wrong, Becky? We need to refine these methods if we're going to keep visiting haunted prisons.
My acupuncturist sold me a soda light bracelet.
Every time we visit a haunted place, we need a new magic bracelet. Got it.
I guess so.
I'm a big fan of magic bracelets, as y'all may know.
Didn't we go to we went to a metaphysical store beforehand and purchased things for protection?
We sure did.
Yeah. Yep.
I got a tiger's eye hematite bracelet for Amber.
Oh, okay.
But not for myself. Nothing for myself.
Yeah, I got a pocket stone. Maybe crystals just aren't that good for protection.
Maybe we're going about our crystal protection purposes wrong. If anybody does know how to use crystals against possession at a haunted prison, please let us know, because apparently we're doing it wrong.
You know what, Diana? We should have kept those hazmat suits that
we should have kept our hazmat suits. The ghost would have been like, oh, I don't know about this. This is,
yeah, exactly.
This we're one too looks, unpredictable.
This one looks weird. Let's get away from them. They would have just thought we're weirdos. Because, like,
maybe.
Who wears a gothed up hazmat suit?
I want to follow them home. Ooh.
Anyway, so Diana, if I were you, I would go visit a woo acupuncturist and see if you can just make sure nothing's stuck to you.
I know a few of those. Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just make sure we've loaded up on magic bracelets, but not the kind that you got.
Because clearly it didn't do a damn bit of good.
We need to up our wording game. So if anybody has any suggestions, we definitely plan on going back to the Eastern State Penitentiary at some point in the future because it was just too cool. But first, we have to go to many, many, many other haunted locations because there's a whole world out there to explore. But most of our adventures at ESP are posted for our patrons at patreon.com/homespunhaints. If you head over there, you can listen now to all of the various stories we can tell about our real haunting experiences at ESP.
Speaking of Patreon, we have a new patron to give a shout out to.
Awesome.
Okay, so this person, I suspect it's not their real name, but the name that they registered for Patreon under is Admiral Curtis. So thank you so much.
Nice. Officer, thank you, Admiral Curtis.
We appreciate it. I don't know what you're an admiral of, but ahoy. I'm sure it's a USS Starship of some sort.
Starship? Ooh.
I bet you anything. That sounds like a Starship name. Yes. Admiral, thank you so much for joining our Patreon.
Yeah, we've been expounding on our various paranormal experiences on our Patreon, specifically for people who have joined patreon.com/homespunhaints. And if you head over there now, you can also listen to all the weird haunting events that have happened to us personally that are too spicy for prime time. But in the meantime, if you're not yet a patron, you can also listen to this commercial.
And after these messages, we'll bring on Matt and Meredith of Boardwalk. Today on the show, we are thrilled to bring on Meredith Aaron and Matt Snow. They are the founders of Boardwalk, which you have probably heard about because they are all over social media. And if you like us, I am sure you love the products that Boardwalk puts out. And just to be clear, Boardwalk is spelled B-O-R-E-D, as in I'm bored, I need to go take a walk for my motherfucking health, as opposed to Boardwalk that you would walk along beside the ocean. We are so thrilled to bring Matt and Meredith on today to talk about Boardwalk and some of their own spooky experiences. And why is it that they have such a macabre, dark, twisted sense of humor that they imbue into their products? Matt and Meredith, thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Boardwalk. How did you all get started and what was your inspiration and how are things going?
We started selling things online as kind of a hobby when we still both had like day jobs in the corporate world, which I guess Boardwalk is evolving into now, but we kind of just started as a hobby. We designed stuff for ourselves. I think we're both just like frustrated creatives because we had corporate jobs and are creative people. So we designed things for ourselves. Everywhere we went, people were like, where did you get that? So we decided we'll put some of it on the internet and see if people buy it. And that was how we dipped our toe into selling things online. Eventually, we got to this inflection point where Matt hated his job and left to work on selling art on the internet full time. I was still working at my corporate tech job. And eventually, I hit the same wall with my job and left and joined him working on that. And that's how we got into doing what we're doing. And then it just grew over time. It sounds like it's a fun job where you just get to make art all day. And it's not that at all. Like, we spend very little time on art and a lot of time doing like very corporate boring things because of the size of company it is now, but it's cool to be able to have some say in where our careers go because we're running our own business. Yeah, that's how we got to where we are.
That's always what running your own business is all about. You think you're going to do what you love.
And then
you do a bunch of boring corporate stuff all day. Yeah, yeah, that's
right.
Yeah. Every business.
Yeah. I assume you both are graphic designers by training.
He is.
Yeah, I am. Meredith is not, but she's got a really good eye for design and composition. And so even though I'm the technician that's like drawing the characters that are on our t-shirts or designing the icons on our conversation decks or doing the illustrations for our activity books, she is the one who sets the brief, so to speak, as far as like, this is the kind of aesthetic that I'm looking for. This is the kind of typography that I'm looking for. And then we work together as far as nailing down like a color palette or something like that.
So you're basically like the creative director.
Yes.
Yeah, we usually describe our creative dynamic as like a band where one person writes lyrics and sings and the other person writes the music and plays guitar. I'm more of a writer than like an actual technician when it comes to design. My design skills are like, they're basic, but I can do a little bit of design, but it's not my strong suit. Matt's a really good designer, but does best if he has a lot of creative direction. So that's what I usually do in our dynamic.
So we just refer to you as Lyndon McCarthy.
Sure.
I guess.
So tell us a little bit about the products that you do have. I assume you started out with t-shirts. It sounds like you did, but you also have your Dell deck, you have your tea towels, you have posters, you have the grievance journal, which I know is very popular. Did I miss anything?
I think that's
pretty much it. We have like some accessories, like messenger bags and duffels and things like that. Basically just a lot of giftable products. We did start with t-shirts. We've kind of been moving away from t-shirts. We'll probably always have some and we'll probably always do some, but it's increasingly been not a focus for a few reasons. We deal with so much IP infringement is the real problem. It's not even the competition. If it was just a matter of our designs versus other people's designs, that would be fine. But when we deal with people constantly stealing our art, and it's so easy to steal graphic tee art, that really takes away our incentive to do it, because I don't want to compete with somebody that's stealing our exact art and selling it for half the price, which they can do because they don't have to pay an artist. They don't have to pay for advertising. They are just completely benefiting from our work and we're getting nothing for it. So that is a disincentive for us.
Yeah, because I mean, we do a lot of advertising on social media, particularly Facebook and Instagram. And a lot of these counterfeiters, they'll come to our website, take a low-res screenshot of our designs, and either just blow that up and print it, which is usually terrible once you actually see the finished product, or they'll hire someone on Fiverr in another country to basically just trace it and start selling it that way, and they're basically just drafting on our ad spend. People will then see the ad, like the product, but then they'll Google around for it, and you know, it's natural. They're just going to gravitate towards whatever product listing comes up that's the lowest price thing. It's just really frustrating that because the barrier to entry for printing and selling tees is much lower now than it was when we first got started. And that's why we've tried to expand into other product categories where the barrier to entry is a lot higher and it makes it more difficult to counterfeit those products. And also, we do all of our printing and fulfillment in-house. We always have. And we can only process those apparel orders so quickly while still making sure that stuff that's going out meets our standards as far as quality. And I think think that unfortunately a lot of people have become conditioned to expecting everything to ship within 2 days and arrive within 4 days. Everything's shipping out of our offices here in the Los Angeles area, and we're printing all of the stuff to order to ship it out. So we do need a little bit longer.
The other reason that we have moved into these other product categories is because we have been doing shirt design for over 10 years at this point, and it's less interesting and exciting because we've been doing it for so long, whereas designing for other products is a new exciting challenge because it's a totally new format. When we approach products, we try to think about products that solve a problem. When we started with shirts, the problem we were trying to solve is the graphic tees that were on the market, especially when we started, were like so not our personality. And it was like early 2000s. It was like, put a bird on everything. And I'm like, I don't want a shirt with a bird on it. Like, I want something spooky, but I want it to be good design. In recent years, problems I've been trying to solve are things like, I struggle with depression and anxiety, and I tried everything for it, and nothing helped me, and I wanted to complain about things, and there was no grievance journal at the time. There was no journal that was like, here's an invitation to complain. And so that was a problem I was trying to solve with that product. Currently, I'm really preoccupied with our screen time addiction. It's so bad. And so I'm always trying to think about, what could I design that would force me to not be on my phone? That's where things like activity books and conversation decks come into play.
I love that. And your grievance journal is fantastic. I just purchased it for my daughter as a coping tool. She's a tween, and she even complains. She's like, Mom, my school is full of so much toxic positivity. What can I do about it? And I'm like, well, I've got just the thing. And she writes in it every night, and she loves it. This is an amazing tool. Were you kind of half serious, half amused when you created it, or did you actually think of it as a serious coping tool that people could use in therapy or for their own self improvement?
It was intended to be both, really, because humor is a great way to deal with like things that are dark and heavy, and it's my go-to coping mechanism. So I wanted to design something that would be helpful to people that are more like me, and like gratitude journals just didn't work for them because I tried and it didn't work for me. I wanted to design something that I knew would work for me and would probably work for other people. But I also wanted it to be something that was like actually fun and not just heavy and serious. Even if you're upset about things, it's still fun to laugh at how upsetting things can be sometimes.
Yeah.
I would say we've been very surprised at the breadth of applications that both the Grievance Journal and the Delve Decks have had. Like Meredith was saying, she was trying to solve a problem for herself, but she was betting on the fact that a lot of other people had these same issues.
Can you give us the blurb for people who don't know what a Delve Deck is?
Yeah, sure. A Delve Deck is basically just a card deck of conversation starters. The product that we designed has four categories to it, from light to dark, and it's a gradient. It's increasingly intense questions. The light questions are more icebreakery type questions, whereas the darker the cards get, the more intense and personal the questions get. So like, if I've just met you, maybe I don't want to get into like really dark stuff. Whereas like, if you're trying to bond with your spouse, maybe you do want to talk about the heavier stuff, or you want to bounce back and forth because you want to take things up and take things down. So this product is designed to help you do that.
Nice. You've mentioned that you started because you were looking for stuff that was spooky and goth, but well-designed. Mm-hmm. So you would consider yourselves spooky people?
I think so. We're big horror fans.
We're definitely spooky enthusiasts, for
like
sure.
Low-key spooky. Like, if you saw us walking down the street, you'd be like, there go a couple of goths, because we dress kind of normal. But personality-wise, we're big horror fans. We tend to be very drawn to macabre things.
I do have the receipts, though. I've seen photos of Meredith in college all dolled up before going to, like, Cure and Sisters of Mercy's show, so...
I had more energy for that in college, the makeup and the clothes and stuff, and now I'm like, I don't care. I just want to wear something comfortable and practical, but that has not changed my taste in things that I enjoy.
I feel you.
And then I think for myself, I've always kind of gravitated towards that on the music side, not so much the fashion side, but then when Meredith and I met, she was actually a big fan of horror and supernatural suspense. I remember early on in our relationship, she revealed that her first love was Carrie by Stephen King. And you told me that you read that for the first time when you were like 8.
Mm-hmm.
And she loved it. And to this day, that's still her favorite book. Whereas I, when we met, I was just like, the real world is horrifying enough. I don't need that. I had always avoided a lot of horror films and stuff like that. But gradually, Meredith got me to start watching first horror comedies and then cheesy, schlocky B-movies from the 70s and 80s. And then I've become a full convert. But I've always had a cynical and acerbic worldview. It took a while for my content consumption to catch up with that.
A lot of what you produce has phrases or messages on the front of it, even with your totes and your tea towels. What would you say is maybe the darkest or the most macabre phrase that you have on any of your products?
We've done so much stuff like that. I think one of my favorite things that I've written that's popped up on some things is that I refuse to rest in peace. I expect to haunt in retribution, because I just love the idea of that, that it's like, I still want to settle scores even if I'm a ghost, obviously. Or at least cause trouble. I'm an atheist. I'm not a big believer in the supernatural, but I love the idea of it. And I'm so drawn to the idea of being a ghost, or like being like a haunting presence. Having a body is such a nightmare. I hate it so much. We talk about this a lot, where I'm just like, it would be so much better if I could just be an ominous mist in a forest somewhere. That's all I want.
Yeah. Hashtag goals. I'm right there with you. Like, ominous mist.
Yeah, not just your run-of-the-mill mist.
It's so easy to dress in ominous mist. Ominous mist never has bad hair days. Ominous mist doesn't have to go to the dentist.
Doesn't have to get up to pee in the middle of the night. Like, it doesn't have real problems.
If it wants to reproduce, it just separates. It's nice.
Yeah. And when people bring up to me, you would miss out on the pleasures of being human, food or sex or whatever. I'm like, yeah, but the trade-off to me would be so worth it, because not having the annoyances of having a body would be so great.
You can't prove that an ominous mist doesn't eat food or have sex.
I guess that's
true. You can't prove that.
For me, I would say, as far as the macabre stuff, so much of our creative work is pairing the macabre statement with cheerful imagery. And that juxtaposition really something that still interests us quite a bit. I would say maybe for me, it would be, it will all work out in the end, which seems very positive and optimistic, but we paired it with a skull and lavender roses. And
very funereal.
Yeah, which kind of goes hand in hand with our Someday We'll All Be Dead, which I think was one of the first ones we did where we tried to pair our more fatalistic sensibility with cheerful imagery, because that's one that's been kicking around since 2018 or so. But yeah, it will all work out in the end, meaning if you're dead, all your problems are over. And that doesn't mean that the people that you leave behind won't be very sad and upset, but that's their problem to deal with. There was, years ago, episode one of 30 Rock, two of the main characters, Tina Fey's character Liz Lemon and Scott Adsit's character, they were talking about some kind of conflict that was arising amongst their staff, and Tina just goes, that's later, maybe we'll be dead by then. And we say that to each other all the time whenever we're facing some kind of crisis related to the business. And I think that we've just kind of really internalized that mindset, probably to an alarming degree.
Why worry now if we could be dead by then? I like that. That's nice.
Or you might be an ominous mist.
Hopefully.
Exactly. Don't have to worry about it.
You said that you've never had anything supernatural happen to you, but you did mention that you did have a very small experience in a spooky apartment.
About a year after we started dating, we moved in together and moved from the DC area up to Baltimore. And the place that we moved into was this row house built in, I think, 1890 or something like that. It was quite an old structure. It had been rehabilitated more recently than that, but probably within a couple of months of us moving in, there was an incident where we were in the dining room and we'd finally taken receipt of some of the furniture, because when we moved in there, we had an inflatable couch, two folding chairs, a box spring, and a mattress, and like a very bare bones bed frame. That was it. And I think a card table. We had to wait a couple of months as we started getting real furniture in there. This is shortly after we got our dining set, and we both felt like we had seen and heard one of the chairs move a few inches while we were looking in that direction, and saw that movement out of the corner of our eye. And we both were like, did you see that? And she said, yeah, I did. But that, I think, is the only instance that I've ever experienced of something out of the ordinary that I could not explain.
Are you tired of websites that have been Frankenstein together?
Oh, my website is so slow and creaky.
Every time I use the search bar, it just returns Abby Normal over and over again.
Becky's sister company, The Concept Spot, holds the secret to life itself and can create new life from nothing. In fact, we've been giving life to highly functional websites for the last 25 years using premium parts we swear we didn't salvage from graveyards.
Ooh, check out that head. Their image.
Instead of going
my new website purrs.
Need a blog? The Concept Spot can do that. Want an online store? We can do that too.
We build our sites from the cellular level. No reused templates or discarded body parts here, so we can make your site do whatever you want and look however you want.
It's gorgeous! I can't even see the stitches.
We can also resurrect your dead website if rigor mortis has set in.
Oh, it's like a new man.
If you think Homespun Haints is frighteningly genius, you should see our websites. Let your favorite ghoulish gals, Becky and Diana, build you a monstrous website that will wreak havoc on the internet for years to come.
Visit theconceptspot.com for more information.
It's live! It's live!
If I were trying to explain it, I would probably say, like, the house settled, something happened outside that caused the floor to shake a little, and the chairs had those felt things on them so they don't scratch the floors, but that means they slide very easily, so it could have been something like that, causing the chair to move a couple inches.
Was it just one chair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, after 110 years, I'm sure the house still had to settle some, sure. And
maybe it was that ominous mist that I aspire to be. Didn't see it.
Could be your future self just checking in and saying, don't worry, one day we'll all be dead. So you've had quite a career. You used to live on the East Coast, and now you're over in LA. You left your corporate jobs behind, built up your own creative company, and now that's becoming corporate again. But you're able to do everything with this twisted sense of humor, which hopefully makes up for not having to be in a cubicle anymore.
I mean, to say it's a hard job is such an understatement. People often ask us, like, oh, how do I get into what you're doing? And, like, I want to do that. I'm creative, too. And I'm always like, I don't think you want to. I don't think you understand what this job entails. If I had known what the job entails, I don't know that I would have done it, because it is so, so hard. The disparate, complex, uninteresting things that we have to be such experts on, whether it's like how barcodes work, how insurance works, how taxes work, like
IP really, law.
Yeah, how IP law works, contract law, such boring, complicated things that we have to know so much about.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're pretty open about being willing to share that information, but in our experience, 99% of the people that we do engage with that ask us that stuff, like, we can tell pretty early on in the dialogue, like, you're not going to do any of this stuff. And we also qualify everything that we say with, this is how we did it. And if we had to do all of this over again, we almost assuredly would not do it the same way.
Right.
I think people sometimes see the public side of what is a creative brand and assume that that is the bulk of what you're doing. But I would guess that only about 5%, 10%, if it's like a really good year, is spent on the actual fun product development and product design aspect of it. The rest of it is all the stuff that Meredith mentioned.
So you would prefer to not be on a screen. You would prefer to be an ominous mist floating around, and you'd probably prefer just to be able to sit and draw all day. Don't we all want to do that? What time period would you live in if you could choose any time period that's actually existed, yeah, like not something in a parallel?
Oh, in the past? Oh. That's...
Yeah. Or the future. Maybe know what the future's bringing.
That's a good question. I remember the 90s because I was old enough to remember it, and I would go back there and stay there. I feel like it was one of the best decades, and I know people might be like, well, that's because you grew up in the 90s, so you idealize it. But I would say the thing I like about the 90s that I wish I could go back to is it was like the one decade where we had enough technology to be comfortable, but it hadn't taken over our lives the way it has now. So, like,
yeah,
you had phones, you had air conditioning, you had cars, like, you had all the things you needed, but it hadn't completely just turned everyone into a screen zombie. Yet.
Yeah, you also had the internet, but you had to sit down at a table and be connected to a landline to access it. You didn't have it at your beck and call 24/7 in your pocket. The internet in the 90s and even the early 2000s was a weirder, more fun, more decentralized place to get information and interact with people.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't feel like my whole life was on the internet.
I think the other thing about the 90s that I look back on with envy is it felt like a time when we were politically making some progress in terms of progressive values. Yeah, there were still problems in the 90s, of course, but it felt like things were moving in a good direction. And when the biggest problem publicly in the 90s was the president got a BJ from his intern, no one loves to hear about it, but like, In the grand scheme of things, I would love for that to be the big problem right now.
That would be headline news that I would welcome. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Another question. I remember I first reached out to you all because on your newsletter, which everybody should sign up for because it's hilarious, on your newsletter, at the very bottom, you're like, would you like to be featured in our newsletter? And of course, I wrote back. I was like, yeah, I want to see what this is all about. And you sent me a series of questions, and they were the weirdest questions I have ever gotten asked. It wasn't like, oh, what's your favorite food? It was like, what curse would you put on somebody? But it's got to be really minor, but it has to be your mortal enemy. It was really, really funny. So I want to turn around and do the same to you. So let's start with the curse. If you could put a curse on your nemesis, but it has to be something small and annoying. It can't be like, oh, I want an anvil to fall on their head, but something that's more of like, oh, I just want their left eyelid to always itch. What would it be? I'm sure you've thought about this because you ask other people this.
I think I'm going to make them very itchy. Just constantly like feel like you got mosquito bites all over the place. Just always itching.
Yeah. I think that's born out of your proclivity for feeling itchy because that's kind of like a psychosomatic response that you have to stressors.
Symptom makes me itchy, and so I know how annoying it is. So
yes.
That's what I would do.
For me, I'm, of the two of us, not the vindictive one, but I would just say, anyone that is doing something for you is not doing it the way that you would do it.
Ooh.
Whether it is bagging up your groceries at the check stand, how people decide to change lanes with or without using a signal, or waiting for ample space to be between you and them, or just anything that is not being done the way that you would do it. Like, you just have to deal with that forever in every circumstance. I think that would probably drive someone really bonkers because... Definitely drives me bonkers.
You brought up two driving things.
Well, I live in LA.
Living in LA does mean that there's a lot of thought going into driving. Even though it's not a crazy long commute by LA standards, it is something that just comes up.
I'm thinking that my curse would be to never be able to answer the question, what is that smell? Just to never be able to answer it. No matter what, you can't find what's making the smell.
Oh, like a phantom stench.
All the time. It doesn't always have to be good or bad. Just you can never find it.
Yeah.
I have another question for you. You do have a lot of themes of curses and poltergeists and even some witchy things in the products that you create. Was that an intention when you started out that you might end up with this witchy following? Because I think you definitely have it.
I think it's kind of happened. I tend to do a lot of things that I am interested in as an artist. That's usually how artists operate. And I'm interested in those things. I think a lot of the underlying themes, if you look past the fact that there's witches and things and you actually look at the statements that are being made, there's a lot of statements about things like gender and justice, which is really an interest of mine, but through the lens of horror. I think that drives a lot of the creative output that Matt and I do.
And I think that that makes a lot of sense because historically, witches typically are empowered women that are not being controlled by men, that are off in the woods doing their own thing. And that is very appealing to you because especially being a woman, every step of your like professional career, you've had to deal with a lot of both covert and overt misogyny.
Yeah.
I feel you, Meredith.
I mean, I think that's just the experience of just women in the world is we deal with a lot of it. One of our designs we did recently that's been successful and popular that's a good example of this is we have the shirt with some witches on it that says girls will be girls. And on the face of it, yeah, it just looks like some witches out having fun flying through the sky on their brooms. But the subtext of it is kind of a threat. It's a response to the boys will be boys attitude towards men behaving or boys behaving in a way that's totally unacceptable and just brushing it off is like, well, they're just boys. To that, I want to say like, well, we just turned you into a frog because we're just girls. That's what I want to say in response to that. Like, if you can be evil and justify it as like, well, I'm just a guy, I can't help myself. We should be evil and justify it the same way. That's really the statement behind that design, even though on the face of it, it's like, oh, it just looks like a fun Halloween design. Pretty much all the things that we do, there is subtext to all of it that is more of a statement beyond just like, oh, it looks spooky.
I do have one final question, which is kind of a weird hypothetical question. Diana and I like to joke around that we have a bunch of dead interns working for us, ghosts, because they don't have to get paid. They don't care about material goods. So they're good workers. But in actuality, we would never not pay even an intern. We've had multiple times people come up and beg to be unpaid interns for us. And we refuse to do it. Like, we just were like, no, you get paid and we can't afford to pay you, so we're sorry, we're just not doing it. What are your thoughts on unpaid labor for the purposes of experience or growth? And leading into that, if ghosts did exist, would it be ethical to employ them without pay?
I don't have any free interns, and I feel the same way that you do. I wouldn't have unpaid interns. I think people should be paid for their work. Ghost interns, I would say, are probably not really unethical because the ghost doesn't need money. It doesn't have bills to pay. So I suppose if the ghost is just looking for something to do because it's bored and there's not a whole lot to do in the afterlife and it wants an activity, I guess that could make some sense. But for people that have bills and lives and responsibilities, I don't think it's reasonable to expect them to work for free.
I would probably just ask the supernatural entity, how can we compensate you fairly? Like, what is it that you want? And if they're just like, well, I feed on the souls of blah, 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 I'd just be like, okay, I will try to figure out a way to lure them to the office for you or something like that. You know, I want to make sure that we at least have that discussion. Some of them might just be like, I'm just looking to pass the time until my penance or purgatory is done. Like the Maitlands, they had to spend, 122 years in their house after they died in Beetlejuice. He wanted to continue working on his scale model of the little town that they were living in, but he also was helping Lydia with her homework. So I feel like I would want to at least have a dialogue with them about, like, what can we give you in exchange for this that will actually satisfy a deed as opposed to something that is kind of beyond petty human concerns for you at this point?
I like the idea of luring the souls mm-hmm. that they need to eat into the office. Oh, I like that. Thanks for indulging me with that question.
Sure.
That was really fun. Well, before we leave, tell everybody where they can find you. Because I know you've got a website, you've got social. Where do you want people to go? And you also have a newsletter you want people to sign up for, I'm sure.
You can find our website at boardwalk.com. That's BOREDWALK.com. You can sign up for the newsletter in the footer of the website.
All the socials are linked on there.
And all the socials are linked on there, too. And follow us on social through those icons. We try to have a mix of fun, static image content. Meredith is an avid tweeter, and now she's also posting that stuff to Threads. We also have a lot of short form video stuff that's funny sketches, so people might enjoy those. And yeah, to Becky's point, we work really hard on those emails. I try to make them as funny as possible because we know that people aren't looking to buy something every time a brand emails them, but I figure if I can entertain people week after week, eventually they will be ready to make a purchase. And as long as they keep seeing our emails and opening them and reading them and enjoying them, that's kind of our ethos about it. Entertain first, sell second.
That's cool.
Yeah, we've done that.
Exactly.
Matt and Meredith, you've been a delight to talk to. It's so great to get to talk to the people behind the brand and to get to know you. I love your work. It is hilarious. It always brings a smile to my face, especially if I'm having a bad day. Every time one of your ads or your social post pops up, I'm like, oh, somebody else gets it.
Oh, thank you.
So I love that.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity. We really enjoyed chatting with you both.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you. And Painted Loves, just remember, be true to yourself. If you start a brand, you're probably not going to get to do what you think you're going to do anyway. So you may as well talk about what you want to talk about and have a spooky day.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielimnik and Diana Doty and produced by Homespun Haints Media, LLC. Editing and music by Becky Kielimnik. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.